Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Blue Jays Nation Radio
with Cam Lewis and Tyler Yaremchuk,
a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Woo! Coomzy, things are going pretty well. Welcome in episode 44 of Blue Jays Nation Radio. I'm Tyler Yaremchuk, and you couldn't have scripted it better than that, Cam. It's just, you couldn't have.
I don't even have words. Like I can't even say anything. I've been sitting here like writing down notes and preparing for the past like 45 minutes, and I have no words. Like, I cannot believe that just happened. That's insane.
We're recording this at 9 a.m. Eastern, but that's 7 a.m. Mountain. So I literally got up like 6 minutes ago, and that is not really an exaggeration. And I look, and Cam has done, he's not kidding, it looks like about an hour of prep on our shared Google Doc that we have for the podcast. But you're fired up, and I can understand why. The Jays are the first team since 1908 to sweep the Yankees in a four-game series at Yankee Stadium and never trail a game. You all listened to the last podcast we had. You know, we said if you can split it, that's fine. If you can take three out of four, that's even better. We really didn't even talk about the possibility of a sweep. But
no, we're arguing. Basically, what it was is we're going back and forth, being like, is two out of two fine? And finally, we're like, yeah, it's fine. Fuck, Jesus Christ.
And it's funny because, like, heading into the series, I wasn't like overly confident, all obviously. No. But then they won that first game, and I was kind of like, you know what? I can't see them losing another one. And then when they lit up Gerrit Cole, yeah, not really lit him up. He left early because of injury, but Steven Matz outpitched Gerrit Cole, essentially, is what mm-hmm. happened in game two. And I was like, yeah, they're not losing another one of these ball games. Oh. Like, it seemed like everything was just clicking so well. And I mean, we waited all year for a hot streak like this from this team, where everything came together, where the offense, the bullpen, and the pitching was clicking at the same time. And that's what we just got for the last 8 games now.
It's amazing how reminiscent this is of 2015. Like, I was going back when I was writing the notes, and I was looking back 2015 schedule, and everybody remembers there was that key series when it was like mid-August, they went into New York and swept the Yankees, and it was the first time they'd ever done that. So this in Yankee Stadium would be what, like the second time they've ever pulled that off?
Yeah.
Third something, I don't know. But yeah, so they went into Yankee Stadium, swept the Yankees, and that came right after that 4-game sweep of the Twins. And it was like, all right, like, they pulled off that sweep over the Twins. That was like, that feels like a real game changer, just like the last series against Oakland was. Team in the wild card mix, you know, completely jumped them in the standings, and they go to New York and just kind of just feels like they killed the Yankees season there. Like, they just sucked the life out of them. Like, when Vladdy hit that dinger off of Chapman, and they went around in the broadcast and zoomed in on the faces of like five different guys, and then Aaron Boone, like, they look like, what the fuck? Like, they look like they had just been hit by an edible they didn't realize they had taken.
Well, we got that. And then you also, like, they also crushed the spirits of the Yankees broadcast team, who was, I mean, they were bitching about the home run jacket, how they were tired of seeing it. And it's pretty rich coming from an organization that plays the most annoying sound possible every that time whistle. They get a strikeout.
I hate it.
But
and the guy who was bitching about it, is the guy who fucking says "see" every time they hit a home run. It's the most obnoxious thing.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Don't allow home runs, you fucking dorks.
It's so funny to get under the skin of Yankees fans. There's a guy I work with at TSN 1260 who is a Yankees fan, and he went off on a rant yesterday about how in 2015 Jays fans just got a little what was the word he used? obnoxious and a little full of themselves. And I was like, okay, that's rich coming from a Yankees fan there with the 27 rings shit you always have to hear about. But the Jays complete the sweep. And not only that, they outscored them like 25-8, 25-9, yep, something like that over the four games. Like, I know a couple of the games got close yesterday. Nate Pearson gives up a couple of bombs. It got a little tight at the end. The third game was 6-3. Ooh, that one was a real nail biter. But like, for the most part, the Jays were just in absolute control of this series from the first pitch on Monday.
Yeah, I think the only one where I thought, yeah, the last two games felt a bit tight. Like the first two, it really felt like they were going to win those two games. Like Robbie Ray was pitching the first game. Yeah, of course they're going to win. Second game, Mads was out dueling Gerrit Cole, you know, healthy lead. That was great. And then third game, they scored those go-ahead runs, 1-7, 8-9. And then last game they had that, again, another late game rally. It was just like, as weird as it seems, it didn't feel like they were going to lose any of those games. There's just like an air of confidence now that there has not been all year. And this is shocking because every game this season, it feels like they could fuck it up. Like when they were playing Oakland, they were up, what, 8 runs? Yeah. And Oakland almost came back. And it was like, that's not surprising. Like, they could find a way to fuck it up. But this series, it just felt, even when they were only up by one or when they were tied in the sixth inning, it was like, they're probably going to win, which is shocking. Yeah. It's nuts.
And you're right, because I've been saying that all year, man. And yeah, it's tied. And I just, for the weirdest reason, I don't know what flipped or what clicked. And it's weird to say that a team takes a quote unquote step forward like this in the middle of a season, but you're right. Like, they were not getting clutch hits earlier in the season. They would be tied against Detroit in the third inning, and I'd be like, well, they're probably fucked and not winning this ball game. And this series was just totally different. And maybe the sweep against Oakland really did install some sort of confidence in us as fans and in the team as well. But yeah, like, even in the start against Gerrit Cole, I was like this close to tweeting out, I can't wait for the Jays to light this guy up. And I was like, no, because then if they don't, like, the tweet will look bad and it'll age poorly. But like, I was feeling that going into the game. I was like, I think they could beat the wheels off this guy. Like, the confidence is at an all-time high.
Because it just seems like every game somebody's coming up now. And, you know, the lineup's deeper now that Alejandro Kirk is hitting. That's so important. And I mean, it sucks that George Springer is not playing, but when he does come back, it just gets even deeper. Like, I wrote down the notes here, like, first game was the big Semien day, 2 home runs. And then game two, it was Alejandro Kirk's big day, 3 hits. And then game three, you know, Vladdy hits that huge home run the 9th inning. The bottom of the order is coming up. Jake Lamb, Jerod Dyson, like, what? And then the fourth game, Bo, huge game. Like,
huge.
They had three huge performances from guys. And then in the other one where they didn't have a huge performance from somebody, they get fucking Jerod Dyson scoring on a very improbable sack fly. Like, it did not look like anybody should be scoring on that. And 37-year-old Jerod Dyson.
Credit to Montoyo for pinch running there as well.
Montoyo had a fantastic series, man.
He did.
Like, really, really good decisions up and down.
When he put Dyson in there for Gurriel, I was kind of like, I don't know if I'd be doing that. Like, he's on third. I don't know why you would need the pinch runner in that situation. Like, it's only an extra 90 feet. Like, just Gurriel's probably quick enough to score on something. And then when you watch the play, you're like, damn, that's a good move from Charlie Montoyo right there. I thought he handled his bullpen exceptionally well, bringing in like Simber when he would, and Richards had a fantastic series. Yeah, I think for as much as we shit on Charlie early in the year, and I get that it's a product of them winning, so obviously we're in a good mood and all the decisions are right when you win, but still, I think there is some credit to give to Charlie here.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the same thing yesterday. They brought in Tim Mesa in the 8th inning rather than waiting for the 9th inning. It was like, that's the best reliever you had available. And the save situation was the 8th inning. That's when New York's best batters were coming up. That's when the game was tighter. And then, all right, we have Nate Pearson for the 9th to score some more runs. He's clearly like not ready for high leverage yet. Maybe he will be, maybe he won't, but they made the right decision there in the 8th with Mesa as well. Like, it's just up and down, like, good decisions, which is fantastic to see, because it's been so easy to just beat on Charlie all year for the dumb shit that he does. But now it's just, it was a masterclass in New York. Everything worked. It was unreal.
All right, let's get into 3 Up, 3 Down presented by Twig and Berries, where we got the promo code NATION15, twigandberries.ca. Free shipping in Canada on orders over $75. You know the show. We ain't doing any fucking downs. These are all positives here. Forget three up, three down. It was a four game sweep. We're going with four ups and we're just going to go through each game. In game one, Hyunjin Ryu was solid. He went six innings. He didn't give up an earned run. He only allowed three hits and he struck out six as well. That was a huge positive. And you already touched on Semien as well. I mean, 2 for 5, 5 RBIs. You know, the big guns came out that game and that was a big reason why they won.
Yeah, it was really nice to see Ryu put together like a huge start in a key spot. I mean, yeah, they ended up scoring 8 runs, but 5 of them were in the 9th inning. So it was like for most of this game, it was Hyunjin Ryu carrying a 2-0 lead they put up in the first inning going up against Jameson Taillon. He's a pretty good pitcher.
Yeah.
You know, he's not great, but he's pretty good. So yeah, it was nice to see. This was kind of this was very reminiscent of a last year Hyunjin Ryu start. It was 6 innings and then they only allowed 3 hits. Didn't walk a guy, struck out 6. It was like New York had nothing going the whole time. And that was just Ryu tossing the ball around, painting corners, fucking guys up, making the Yankees look hopeless. And it was such a nice way to just, you know, set the tone for the entire series. Just had them off balance immediately and felt like they never really found themselves after that at all.
Game two, it was the Alejandro Kirk show. Captain Kirk. And I mean, this is a guy who the main MLB account was posting about him after his 2 home run performance in the Bronx on the season. Now he's got that average up to 273. He's got an OPS of 839. He has 7 home runs in 132 at bats. But man, I mean, you need guys like that to step up during a playoff race. There's no denying that Kirk has the natural talent, and it was fully on display in game two there with the 2 bombs, and especially with one of them coming off Garrett freaking Cole.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, no, it's like I said earlier, it makes the lineup so much deeper when this guy's hitting. Like, yeah, that's so key. Like, you know that you're not your big five anymore because Springer's out, but you know, Semien, Vlad, Bo, and Hernandez, you know, they're going to put up runs. They're going to do what they do, but that's less than half your lineup. So you need a couple more guys to kind of stretch it out a little bit. So there's not quite like a black hole. And now you have Gurriel is heating up, Kirk's heating up. And then all of a sudden the lineup looks like very 2015-esque. I know I just keep going back to 2015, but you can't not.
It's
like,
such an easy comparison to draw to, right?
Right there.
And it was the Kirk, last time any of us were truly happy. So
yeah. And Kirk right now hitting like he is, it kind of feels like the Chris Colabello of that team. Like, I mean, completely inaccurate comparison. Nothing similar about these two, nothing similar. But it's just like that kind of random guy lower in the order who just comes behind your Bautista, your Donaldson, your Encarnacion, and just adds to the bottom of the order and makes it fucking impossible for pitchers to get their way through.
Game three of the series, it was a 6-3 win. Alek Manoah, you know, didn't have we are on game three, the Manoah. Yeah, I read the wrong box score. Manoah didn't have necessarily his best stuff, but he found a way to get you into the 6th inning at least. He did give up 3 earned. He did give up 5 hits. He only struck out 4. It wasn't his best work, but you're not going to get that every single time out, especially from a rookie starter who's been as good as Manoah has been. But it's almost reassuring for me when a guy doesn't have his best stuff and he can still get you into the 6th inning like Manoah did.
That's what I've liked about Manoah a lot in kind of recent games. Like, as sick as it is, like, you know, his debut at Yankee Stadium, like 7 scoreless or whatever it was, and allowed like 2 hits. Like, yeah, that was fucking sick. Like, but that's not going to happen every time. Now the league's, you know, going to figure him out a bit more. They know who he is. But the nice thing about him, and this is what is so endearing about him as a pitcher, is that even when he's not at his best, like he wasn't, you know, he was walking guys. He hit a batter. Like, it wasn't the best thing, but he still grinded his way through and damn near put up 6 innings. And if not for one really bad pitch to Brett Gardner that he smashed, then he could have gone 6 innings shutout ball, which would have been, that would have been amazing. Like, I mean, if you had told me at the beginning of the year that we'd be in fucking early September in a playoff race and Alek Manoah comes out and does exactly this and showed me that line, I'd be like, yeah, fuck yeah, absolutely. That's sick. And then the other thing to point out about this game is how good the relief performances were. Like Simber coming in, getting 4 outs, 3 of which on strikeouts. Trevor Richards getting 3 outs, 2 of which on strikeouts.
Huge
as well.
Outs,
like,
too. Yeah.
Like, holy shit. But Simber outing, like, it's specifically that guy is a blast to watch. Like, he gets so fired up. It's so entertaining.
Even in while we're on the topic, like, I love watching relievers get fired up. Like, that shit just, oh, it's so good. And even Mizah yesterday, when he got that double play and they showed on Sportsnet, like, the close-up camera of him, like, watching the double play and, like, talking to himself and letting out just, like, the biggest fuck yeah possible was awesome to watch. RBIs in game three went to Guerrero, Hernandez, Semien, and Jake Lamb with a clutch RBI. Yes. And in game four, they also got a clutch RBI from Breivik Valera. I mean, those are the clutch kings of this lineup, I suppose.
There's something, I don't know what's going on here, but ever since they acquired Jake Lamb, and last time, you know, we were talking,
he didn't
about
even know he was a Blue Jay.
We were laughing. We're like, this guy's not on the team. He's not even real. But look at this. Jake Lamb's been in five games now. They've won all of them. 8-0 against Oakland, 8-0 against the Yankees, 5-1 against the Yankees, 6-3 against the Yankees, 6-4 against the Yankees. Like, what? What did this guy do? Jake Lamb is the answer. He is the turning point. Ever since he's been on the roster, they can't lose.
Game four of this series, it was, for a large chunk of it, the Jose Berríos show. And that was also fantastic to see. They went over on the broadcast again, like, some of the mechanical changes he's made since coming over to the Toronto Blue Jays. He pitches into the seventh inning. He strikes out eight, and he gives up two earned and a total of five hits. He was really, really good, though. And part of the reason you love having a guy like a Berríos, and I suppose this rings true even for a guy like Robbie Ray, is when they're on the mound, you're more confident in letting them go 105, 110 pitches like they did and letting him save your bullpen a little bit. And he can go deep and still be effective when he's at that 105, 110 pitch mark. A really, really solid start from Jose Berríos.
Yeah, this was why the Jays went out and paid the price they did to get this guy. Mm-hmm. Is Jose Berríos, you know, he's not an ace. He's not. If you're a contender and Jose Berríos number one, it's just, he's not David Price, right? Like, when 2015, they went out and got David Price. It's kind of a different thing here. They got Jose Berríos as a really good number two, and he's an absolute fucking horse. Like, this guy, since he came into the big leagues, is the type of guy who is frequently, like, towards the top of Major League Baseball in innings pitch. Like, this year, he leads MLB in innings pitch, 166 and one third. Like, this guy is durable, never gets hurt, just can go deep into games, and that's great. It's such a game changer for a team like this, where the bullpen, even though things are going a bit better right now, is still quite shaky. So having a pitcher who can, like, it would have been a more difficult game both for game three and game four after that if they had to pull Berríos after six, but he comes out and does the seventh, and that's huge. Like, that's a game changer. If he doesn't do that, you don't know if they wind up winning the fourth game in the series, because maybe they had to use Tim Mesa in that game and then he's not available, blah blah blah. Like, you know, all of this is like domino effect, right?
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, Berríos' start was fantastic. It's also great to see him rebounding, because he was pretty bad when he first came over, and it seems now he's adjusted. He's worked with Pete Walker and he's figured it out. He's been really fucking good.
Speaking of Pete Walker, I love the note you have here in this in our show prep. First four game sweep in New York since 2003. Starters were Roy Halladay, Kelvin Escobar, Corey Little, Doug Davis, and
Pete Walker came out of the bullpen in the finale.
That's yeah. Right. You love to see it.
Love it.
You love it.
Everything goes full circle. Time's a flat circle. It's amazing.
That is 3 of 3 Down presented to you by Twig and Berries. Check them out, twigandberries.ca, and use that promo code NATION15. The Jays now on pace for 90 wins, which is better than in 2016. To get there, here's what they got to do. They got 7 games this season against the Orioles, including a 4-gamer that is on tap. 6 more against the Rays. Those will be tough ball games, because if anything is going to sink this Jays run, it will be baseball games against the Tampa Bay Rays. I can feel it in my bones. They also have 7 against the Minnesota Twins and 3 against the New York Yankees. It's not an easy schedule, but it's certainly not a tough schedule.
No, not at all. So there's 23 games left, 14 of which are against two teams that are very bad. The Orioles are damn near one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball, bottom three. The Twins are quite bad as well. Tampa, as you know, is good. But the thing is that if they want to get to 90 wins, which seems to be the cutoff to make the playoffs, it might be different this year because the Yanks and Red Sox are pretty good, unless the Yanks just lose out for the rest of the year, which it seems they want to do. If they take care of business against Baltimore and Minnesota and go 6-1 against both those teams, they only need to beat either Tampa or New York once to to get to 90 wins. They have to go 13-10 to get to 90. I mean, obviously you want to do better in the head-to-head against New York. You want to win that series or sweep it like they did here. But yeah, quite honestly, the Jays are in control of their own destiny with 14 games against terrible teams. If they win 12 of those 14 games, they're probably going to make the playoffs.
Well, right now they're a game and a half back of the Boston Red Sox, but they have 3 games in hand on Boston. So if you win your 3 games in hand, you're going to be dead tied with the Red Sox, and they're half a game back of the New York Yankees with 1 game in hand. So if you win your game in hand, which you can say is the second end of the doubleheader against Baltimore, which you should win, that right there, man, like you control your own destiny in this playoff race. Like you said, beat the bad teams, snag a couple of wins against the good teams, and you should be in the wild card game. And at this point now, considering this little run they've been on, I'm really hoping they can put themselves in a spot where they're not just in a wild card game, but they're hosting it like they did back in 2016. Cause I think that would be awesome.
It's a game changer. That's really the goal. Like, you want to get yourself into a situation where you finish as the top wild card team and you're at home and you can start Robbie Ray. And that's what they're lined up for right now.
The Yankees go 3 against the Mets, a random 1 game against the Twins, and then 3 against Baltimore, 3 against Cleveland, 3 against Texas, 3 against Boston, which will be huge because the Yankees and Red Sox go head to head on a weekend where the Jays are playing the Twins 4 times. So right there, that weekend, you need to 4 game sweep the Twins, because then it'll just guarantee you're gaining games on both Boston and New York.
Yeah.
What or if there's like a sweep, you're completely taking a team out of it.
I think what we want to see is we have to pick who would we rather face. Would you rather face Boston or New York? I'd probably rather face... Actually, fuck, that's really hard.
Chris Sale or Garrett Cole?
Oh, fuck. I forgot about Chris Sale.
I know, me too, man.
Oh, Chris, I don't even want to think about this. Never mind.
The best case scenario is that both those teams, it's tight... Or the best case scenario is Seattle. The best case scenario is it's tight right down to the end, and whichever team makes it decides to burn Garrett Cole or Chris Sale in the season finale to get into the playoffs.
Yeah.
And or, you get like their second starter.
Yeah. Or there's a chance, you know, maybe Garrett Cole's injured.
That too, which you never want to cheer for injuries, but that is possible. The Yankees also, like I said, will play Toronto, and then they also have 3 against Tampa this year. The Boston Red Sox, they have 3 against the White Sox coming up. So life's not getting any easier for the COVID riddled Boston Red Sox. Seattle, they play 3 times. They also get 6 against Baltimore. So a chance for them to beat up on a bad team. They play the Mets twice, the Yankees 3 times. And then they end the year with a 3 gamer against the freaking Nationals, which
weird
sounds unfair. But the Jays do get to end the season against Baltimore as well. That's also who they're playing up next. Before we dig into that series against the Baltimore Orioles, Coombsy, you had a chance to catch up with our friend Neil Keefe, who is always a just bag of sunshine when talking about the New York Yankees. And I would expect this conversation you had with him did not go any different.
All right. We've got Neil Keefe, our Yankees fan correspondent from Keefe to the City. Neil, what the fuck is happening in New York right now? Give me your perspective of what just went down.
Yeah, I mean, certainly nothing good. The Yankees have lost 6 straight. They lost 4 in a row here to the Blue Jays. They no longer hold the first wildcard spot. They're barely hanging on to the second. This weekend against the Mets coming up, I don't expect anything good to happen. So I expect by Monday after this weekend, they'll probably be out of the playoff picture altogether. And this is the team we saw in April, in May, in June, in the first week of July. And they're back and even worse than ever before, as they've just completely collapsed here. And it's hard to envision them picking it up. It's hard to envision them suddenly turning it around for these 22 games. The offense is a disaster. The starting pitching is banged up. Garrett Cole's out with a hamstring problem. Jameson Taillon's now out. The bullpen is just unbelievably bad. And their manager is among the worst in all of baseball. So there's not really any positives right now with the team outside of, I don't know, Gary Sanchez has hit a couple home runs this week, and I think that's the one positive. And Clay Holmes has been good out of the bullpen. That's it. The rest of the entire team sucks, and everything about them sucks.
So this is kind of shocking to see, because I remember pretty much from mid August onwards, it really looked like they had turned a corner. Right, so the trade deadline, it was go get Anthony Rizzo, go get Joey Gallo. All of a sudden, there's 2 lefties in the lineup. That was a very righty-heavy lineup. And it's like, all right, this is a lot deeper. And then things started to click, and they won 13 games in a row. And I think Correct me if I'm wrong, but that was the Yankees' longest winning streak since the 1940s.
Yeah, it was.
And so it really looked like they had pulled it together, right?
From afar, it did. But if you watched all of those games, or even if you just go back and look at the final scores of those games, it really wasn't the case. In 8 of those 13 games, they won by 1 or 2 runs. In only 4 of them, or I mean, rather, in only 2 of them, 2 out of the 13, did they win by 4 or more runs. They were all nail-biting, grinded-out wins where they either had to have some crazy comeback happen, they had to have somebody bail Aroldis Chapman out in the bullpen. They weren't convincing wins. Every single one of them went down to seemingly the last out of the game. It just wasn't what you see from a team that pulls off a 13-game winning streak. You think there'd be more convincing wins, more blowouts along the way. And if you compare it to what the Rays did, because at the same time the Yankees had they went on like a 27-9-ish run from the All-Star break, the Rays actually played one game better than them during that time. And while the Rays didn't put together a 13-game winning streak, when they stacked their wins, they're fucking blowout wins. They're winning by 6 runs, 7 runs. They're giving their bullpen a rest days. They're be able to give guys days off. They are a great team. And when you think about what the Yankees did during from the All-Star break on, how many wins they put together, they weren't able to get any ground. They didn't make up any ground on the Rays. They actually now have lost ground significantly. That just goes to show you what type of winning it was. So yes, a win's a win, and you'll take any win any way you can get it. But that 13-game winning streak was a mirage, and it put this idea into Yankees fans that this team actually is better than they are. This team is actually the team that was expected to get to the World Series. This is the team that could win the pennant. It's not the case at all. It's the same team all season with the same problems. It's, you know, DJ LeMahieu has fallen off a cliff from the last 2 years. Aaron Judge, when he's not going, the Yankees don't win. Stanton has been, you know, hot and cold. He's had a good year, but like, he doesn't have 30 home runs. He has under 80 RBIs. I don't consider that a good year for Giancarlo Stanton. Gary Sanchez has been on and off. Joey Gallo's been completely awful as a Yankee. Anthony Rizzo, you know, he homered in the first 2 games as a Yankee. Then he missed time with COVID. And then he didn't homer for almost a month. Like, he hasn't been good. Gleyber Torres is basically playing himself out of the organization. Gio Urshela looks like the guy the Indians and the Blue Jays gave up on. And you know, who else is left? Luke Voit, the guy was unbelievable, won AL Player of the Week, and then Boone sat him on the bench the next week so Brett Gardner could play. Now we have a top 20, 25 MLB hitter used as a pinch hitter every night. It's just, it's catastrophic how poorly the team plays, how poorly they're run, both in the dugout and in the front office. And I mean, even if they are to somehow hold on here and get one of the wild card berths, I know I told you the Blue Jays are 100% getting one of them, so they'll have to beat Boston out for the other one. Even if they do that, they're going to have to do this all the way to game 162. So there's no more like lining up Gerrit Cole, who's hurt, by the way, for the one game playoff. They're going to have to use him as many times as they possibly can. And then you're going to get to the one game playoff, probably not have him, have to pitch someone else. And the difference between him and anyone else in the rotation is vast. And then even if you win that game, now you go to Tampa, who mm-hmm. you can never beat, play them in Tampa where you never win. It doesn't even matter if they get to the one game playoff because they're never getting out of the first round.
Yeah, that's the daunting challenge I think all of us fans, Yankees, Red Sox, and Blue Jays are kind of seeing right now. It's like we're all rah-rah-rah mostly for getting into the wild card. And then it's like, okay, right after that, you gotta face the fucking Rays, who look right. like literally unstoppable.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And on the other end of things, it's like the White Sox get to go in because their division is a joke and they're gonna get lit up by the Astros. So it's gonna be, you know, probably we'll see at Rays Astros again for the second straight year. And it's frustrating because while I've told you this all season, like the Blue Jays for you guys, it's not really that big of a deal. If you miss out on the postseason, I mean, now it would kind of suck because of the run you've been on, but if you get in, you lose the one game playoff or you win it, you lose in the ALDS. It's like, whatever, you guys have a young core. Your future is you're not even in the future. You know, you're still ways away from being the team to beat. Whereas the Yankees, like, this is their window. I mean, these guys are all about to either get paid or be on the other side of 30 and suck. And the window is just closing rapidly and they're not doing anything to stop it.
So from a New York perspective, then, I mean, just ignoring what may or may not happen for the rest of the year, maybe they get hot, maybe they don't, maybe they make it, maybe they lose in the wild card, whatever, who cares. But based on what you've seen, like the whole year, like what is Yankees plan moving forward? Like, what do you do?
I have no idea what they do. I mean, the first thing you have to do is the fucking last day that whatever that ends up being, unless it ends with a World Series appearance, the first move has to be changing the fucking manager, because that idiot hasn't gotten any better at his job in 4 years. He just take, for instance, the most recent game on Thursday night against the Blue Jays. You know, the Yankees are losing by 2 runs. He brings in Andrew Heaney, who has been just an absolute joke for the Yankees. And he brings him in. He gives up 4 hits and 2 more runs. Then in the bottom of the ninth, the Yankees end up scoring 2 runs, which may have tied the game. They may have ended up winning that game, turning around everything, erasing a game off the Jays run here on the deficit. But instead, he just keeps doing these atrocious moves. And I get the offense hasn't been there. It's hard to do that. But Brett Gardner can't be batting leadoff. You know, Gleyber Torres can't be batting fifth. He's a friggin' joke. He's terrible. And so the first thing has to be the manager has to go. His lineups are bad. He doesn't listen to the analytics department. His bullpen management is atrocious. He's got to go. Then you have to decide what to do with Gleyber Torres, because the Yankees tried to get Trevor Story at the trade deadline. And, you know, every major, MLB reporter has reported that they failed to do that. So it's clear they're ready to move on from Gleyber Torres at shortstop. He can't field, and he doesn't hit enough to back up his awful fielding. So they need to go out and get Story or Seager or Correa. They need to make a change there. But then you're stuck, because Gleyber, if you're going to stick with him, then he has to play second. So you have to move LeMahieu off second. He signed for 5 more years, and he's a Gold Glove winning second baseman. So now you move him to first, or you move him to third and move on from Urshela. I don't know what they do. All I know is that they have a lot of decisions to make this offseason, whether it's, you know, I mean, I can't imagine they would move on from Sanchez. I know a lot of Yankees fans want him too, but I think he'll be back. I think Joey Gallo, he's under contract. He'll be back. Judge will be back. Stanton signed for the next 37 years. so, you know, they have moves to make. I don't know what they do. They need to figure out their rotation. It needs to be better. You know, going into this season, planning on Corey Kluber and Jameson Taillon being 40% of your rotation when the guys, neither of them have pitched in 2 years, was never a really sound plan. So they're sort of getting what they signed up for. They signed up for a team that they brought back the same exact team from the last 3 seasons and expected a different result. And when Brian Cashman traded Sonny Gray away to the Reds for fucking nothing, he said, we cannot go through the same exercise next season and expect the same result. Yet he has brought back the same exact roster since pretty much 2018, and they keep failing and they keep losing and they keep coming up short, and he does not make any changes. So a lot of changes need to be made this offseason. And maybe, like you said, maybe they do get hot, even though the Yankees claim they don't believe in hot streaks, which is just crazy. But maybe they get hot over the last 22 games. Yeah, maybe they get hot and they make it, and this is all a moot point. But as of right now, I don't know how anyone could feel good and think that anything is going to change here over the last 3 weeks.
So next up for the Yanks, you guys are going to face the Mets in Queens. So it's going to be the Mets, and there's one random game against Minnesota. That's kind of weird. Then it's off to Baltimore, and then it's at home against Cleveland, Texas. So it's a pretty light schedule. I mean, it's similar to the Jays. We've got 23 games left, 14 of which are against the O's and the Twins. And then later on in September, we have 28th, 29th, and 30th. New York comes to Toronto for what will, I imagine, be like 3 very important games. So we're looking forward to that. I'll probably give you a shout around that time too, and we'll see if times are better for you guys and if times are worse for us. I have no offense, but I do hope it continues trending in this direction.
I don't see how it doesn't. I don't see how it doesn't continue this. Like you just said, the Blue Jays schedule is perfect. That could be 14. Yeah. What you just said could be 14 wins. Like at worst, what are they going to do against the Orioles in 7 games? 6-1 is like, I can't imagine the Orioles stealing a game. The Twins are horrendous. And yeah, the Yankees will head to Toronto for the first time in 2 years. And it's kind of odd that they played the first Blue Jays series in Florida, in Dunedin. Then they played them in Buffalo. Now they play them in Toronto. So a little bit of everything for them. But by that time, I mean, maybe the Yankees are playing spoiler by that time. I don't know that they'll actually be playing for themselves.
We shall see. Well, thanks for coming on, Neil. I always appreciate it.
Thank you, Cam.
All right, there you go. That's Coombsy in conversation with Neil Keefe, who is always entertaining when he's talking about his New York Yankees. Let's get set for this 4-gamer at Baltimore. Up next is brought to you by DoorDash. Ding dong. BJN Pod DD is the promo code you need, and it gets first time users of the app 25% off and no delivery fees. Friday two on Saturday, one on Sunday. We're thinking sweep, right? Like the Jays, three out of four, maybe I'll be okay with, depending on how it breaks. But when there's a doubleheader on Saturday, you need to win both those. And you got Robbie Ray on Friday as well. So you should win that game.
Yeah, the Jays, you know, given the way things are going right now, you just swept Oakland. You just swept the Yanks. Like, that's so big. You can't go and lose a game to the Orioles. Like, yeah. we'll live with 3-1. It'd be fine, but we won't be happy about it. You got to sweep this. And you have Robbie Ray going on Friday, like you said. That's a huge way to start. And there's the doubleheader. I think the doubleheader is actually advantageous to the Jays because, as we've said, the bullpen hasn't been great. So these 7-inning games are quite good. One of those starts, we're pretty sure, is going to be Hyunjin Ryu, which is great. And then it looks like Thomas Hatch is coming up from AAA. So they'll probably do Hatch. Maybe we'll see Merriweather or Pearson pitch a couple of innings. Maybe that'd be kind of interesting. And then Sunday at Steven Matz, who's been really good recently.
Yeah.
Like, we, you know, it looks like April Steven Matz again, which is great. And that's kind of what the Jays have going on right now, is every single game there's a good starter pitching, which is a key reason why they're on this streak.
Best case scenario Saturday is Ryu goes complete game shutout against the Orioles. And then the second game of that series, you can just go like 2-3 innings of Thomas Hatch, 2-3 innings of Nate Pearson, whatever else you need from Julian Merriweather, and bang, the bullpen's rested heading into Sunday.
Yeah, pretty much. That's it. And then same thing, like on Friday, we'd love to see 7-8 innings from Robbie Ray, 19 strikeouts, some fucked up shit, locks up the Cy Young, easy peasy, lemon squeezy. That's what it's all about.
All right. We already touched on the out-of-town scoreboard before the conversation with Neil, but the Mariners are hosting the D-backs for a series this weekend. And as for the Yankees and Red Sox, the Red Sox start a series against the Chicago White Sox, and the New York Yankees, they're taking on the Mets, I believe, right? Yes, they are. They're taking on the Mets. Coombsy, you enjoy this four-gamer against the Baltimore Orioles, and we will chat soon.
I most certainly will. Sweep them. Fuck them up.
Thanks for tuning in to Blue Jays Nation Radio, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.